It feels like the sort of the catharsis that you get from that kind of communal 2 minute hate directed at whoever is just on the tribal outgroup. You know what I mean? It obviously varies depending on where you are on the internet, but you just see it everywhere now. The digital landscape is just filled with, well, at least we're better than these people. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
It kind of it makes you think twice when you hear those like conspiracy theories about like this planet is just a louche farm. Like we're just our misery is like food to the beings that run this show. It's like actually it, I can see why people would like fall. I mean, that's essentially just Gnosticism, but like in a weird way, it's like a modern version of like a Gnostic viewpoint, kind of like world prison type thing. But like I get it because it looks like the systems that are in place are like designed to just keep you like feeding misery out into the world. And then like you even have like bots now, like non-human machines that are like encouraging more emotional disruption in your life, you know, like leaving hate comments and stuff. It's wild.
It's weird when you see the bot recursion effect, where it's bots arguing with bots, replying to bots, and you just think the internet sometimes does feel like a mistake, which is obviously we're speaking digitally. I understand the irony there, but I don't know. AI, let's stop right now.
Well, it's I mean, there is something, on a spiritual level, the fact that the internet was built as a war platform,
Oh, definitely.
that,
Good
yeah,
point.
like that's where it started. And there's something about that that I think has slowly tainted everything, because it's all so much of it's just anger and rage. Even what you're talking about, the 2 minute, we'll all, scapegoat this person to feel better about ourselves, but it's not 2 minutes, it's like perpetual. It just
I
keeps going.
it would be healthier if it was if it was contained within 2 minutes,
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But it's
yeah.
you are totally right. It's never ending, so you never actually get the catharsis that presumably you're looking for by expressing that stuff. It's just it's really self-defeating.
Maybe, maybe, maybe we're all in the village. Maybe that's what's really
Look, it really does. You immerse yourself back into the prisoner again. I've been watching it for years, but every time I watch it, and never more than this latest time, I just feel like so much good science fiction. It's arguably more relevant right now. I know that's a bit of a cliche thing to say, but it really feels apropos for the prisoner.
Very
The
much so.
constant surveillance, even just that. You know what I mean? That's a huge thing.
Yes,
Well, and
yes.
we have already in the first four episodes, which, by the way, welcome to Soapbox. We're talking about the prisoner, and we're doing a four probably part series on this incredible show that neither Kurt nor I have ever seen. And our friend here, how do you want to be recognized? Do you Oh,
want your re
I meant to say that actually at the start. Sorry about that. Just call me Joe. That's fine.
Okay,
Just Joe.
this is
Okay,
Joe.
Joe. Yeah.
And yeah, which has been a longtime favorite of his, and so yeah, I basically had been looking for some this kind of vibe and like something really good that felt, you know, locked in a certain period in time and had a lot of vibes and aesthetic that it didn't apologize for and took seriously and like just was looking for stuff and found the show and made a little comment about it. And Joe jumped on it and was like, "That's one of my favorite shows. Like I watch that every few years." And I was like, "Well, let's do that." And Kurt was on board, so that's what's happening now. But like, so this first episode is the first four episodes of the show that we're discussing, and even with already within those first four episodes, speaking of the relevance to today, we have the mention of like, which side are you on? Oh, well, they both look the same, like a mirror looking back at one another, and then eventually will become just one side. And then like the goal, it's mentioned that the goal is to turn the village into the whole world. Like, I mean, yeah, that's pretty fucking spot
I mean that can apply pretty much all across the West, and with the sort of totalizing, flattening effect of the internet outside of the West especially. But I just cannot stop thinking about how he saw the future of the UK in 1967. It's insane. It's really, really crazy.
It's interesting that this happens to coincide with, I've been feeling like, I as a practitioner, I spend a lot of my time just kind of like paying attention and trying to listen to like, where are the vibes? What are my spirits trying to like highlight in the world for me to dig deeper into? Like that there's something in there for me, to learn or to get something out of. And like one of those things recently was this tension between Aldous Huxley and his brother Julian Huxley. And I don't know how much you actually know about his brother, but like his brother was the founder and president of the British Eugenics Society.
How did I not know that? I like Huxley. I did not know that.
Well, he also spoke out, never directly, right? Because it's in this very English sort of like,
Reserved.
yeah, but like he spoke out very, very much against ideas. And he was an insider within an elite family. Actually, one of their cousins ended up the first president of the BBC. Yeah.
Oh man, that's crazy.
So I know it's a little bit of a side note, but it's like that, and also I didn't know this until I was looking into Huxley a little bit. He was the professor of George Orwell.
Oh, I
Oh,
did know that.
what?
I did know
Aldous
that.
fucking Huxley.
That's really crazy. That
And
is crazy.
because what started me on this kick was like, was Aldous warning us, or is this a hyper sigil that ended up helping this reality anchor in the consciousness and thus bring it about easier? But that's another podcast, I suppose. So, at what age was it that you were turned on to this? Was it like a long time? Did your parents watch this show? Like, how did this happen?
I don't know if my mum and dad watched this. They are roughly the right age where they would have probably caught it as it was being rebroadcast, like throughout the 80s. But I don't know how I don't think my mum would have liked it. And I'm unsure about my dad. I was trying to get him to watch it recently, but my dad has this weird older person thing. I don't know if you've ever encountered this. Well, he's kind of sniffy about watching anything before like 1995 for whatever reason. You know what I mean? Which is weird because you would expect him to have nostalgia for previous decades, but it's the
Interesting.
opposite.
So it's almost like a no, I'm not that old. I'm not old fashioned. Like I'm hip enough to watch only 90s stuff.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it is something like that. But I got into it. Actually, I can remember how I got into it. I was wearing an Iron Maiden t-shirt in school, and one of my a substitute teacher said to me, "Oh, you know that song, The Prisoner? Have you ever seen that show? That's what Iron Maiden wrote that song about." And I was like, "Did not know that. Never heard of this show." And we had like two free periods one time, and he was like, "I'm going to put on The Prisoner," and he just sat and did whatever at his desk, and just let us watch The Prisoner, the first two episodes. And it was just as you can imagine, at 14 years old, and you're already just starting to develop your own taste outside of like your family and all that. You're already into science fiction and spy stuff and all that. The Prisoner lands like really like an atomic bomb, you know what I mean? It's crazy. And then through that, you just get onto so many male things. And I just never, it's one of the things, I never went through a period where I thought, "Oh no, The Prisoner's actually really shit," and I've been deluding myself into liking it. Which you it's easily done if you've been into something for your teens. Sometimes you'll go through a wee phase where you rebel against it, and then maybe you come back to it, or maybe you don't. But I've just always loved it and proselytized about it to anybody that'll listen.
Yeah, no, that's, I guess that's what this show's pretty much about. So,
What it's funny, I have actually, I think I watched the very years ago, very first episode of this. My video store Videodrome here in Atlanta that has everything, they had a copy of this whole series on VHS, and I had originally I intended to see the whole show because I had a friend that was like, oh man, this thing is crazy. Like you definitely should watch this. But it was so expensive to go through a whole TV series, so I just got
Oh, I can remember
yeah.
that.
So I never got much beyond. Yeah, one thing I want to say, I just realized this, 'cause the aesthetics of this show is so specific to its era and is so fucking awesome. But it's really, really similar to the original Star Trek series, and they're 2 or 3 years apart.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that comparison before.
Yeah, like definitely like when he's not in the village, but he goes into like the back rooms where it's like these domes and like all the leather metal office chairs and like the pod chairs and like the egg chairs and all that stuff. Like that is feels very, and it's also interesting to me because like they're both cult sci-fi series, and The Prisoner is so fucking British, and Star Trek is so fucking American about like there's like just this cultural difference where I always feel like if in your DNA as being American is like you are hopelessly optimistic to a point of absurdity. And then like to be British, there you're like hopelessly
It's
pessimistic.
the opposite. It's absolutely the
Yeah.
opposite.
And it's like the US never could have made Warhammer 40K. Like that is such a fucking UK thing to like
Agreed.
like the spirit of it.
For better and worse.
Worse, yeah. And it's awesome. It's just a funny dichotomy that I was just thinking about as we were talking about this. Yeah, to get us back on track, I'm sorry. I just had to make that aside.
No.
But yeah, it is, it feels watching this, especially as it gets going into the second or third episode, it's got that quality that's like it's like the old Twilight Zones where it's just it's undeniably good, and there's no it's like once you start watching it, it's like I don't want to stop watching. This is crazy. And the other thing about the sci-fi aspect of it is too is like how technologically advanced are the people running the village? It's there's like a quality to it where it's like it almost feels like they're aliens, like
Even just if you think of the early, well, let me just ask before I say this, what episode has everybody seen to? Just so I know to go past certain things.
I stopped at four,
I've stopped it
so
for.
yeah,
We
so
watched through four.
yeah, so what it's the Chimes of Big Ben,
ABC, A, B, and C.
A, B, and C, Freedom for All. I think that's the voting one.
Oh, free for all.
Free for All. Yeah,
That
that's the
was
voting one.
four, yeah.
Yeah. Which also that one's also like, wait, what the fuck is going on here? What can they do?
Well, that was my wife actually. I had her watch the first one with me to just see like if she could get into it, and she loved it. So
Yeah.
she's been watching it with me, and after we watched the fourth one, she's like, what do you think those balls actually are?
Yeah, with the guys
And
hanging
I'm
out
just
just
like,
staring at them.
And like, yeah, well, when he walks in and all those people are like sitting at the desk, it looks like they're like psychically holding it in place
Into
or something.
place or something,
And in that first episode, in the very first one, he sees that guy just going like, like making those weird ass sounds and faces at it. And it, I was like, it feels like alien tech.
And what it, are it like a demon or something? And it's so amazing because it is the stupidest fucking prop, and it's so creepy.
My enjoyment of Rover, I've got to say, isn't it? It's no ironic. I really do. You're right. It's the creepiness. Anytime it envelops somebody, I do think that's genuinely effective. And it's the effectiveness is kind of bolstered by the fact that it's a hot air balloon. You know what I mean? Very visibly.
Well,
And it's, yeah.
and that's closer to what UFO there's it's orbs, right? Like that's what everybody sees.
Featureless.
Featureless, these like strange, and then that it's so weird that this thing is like the most alien thing on television possibly, and it's just
And
a balloon.
it rolls. It rolls like a bell.
The sound design is so
Yeah, it's
amazing.
excellent. I and
That's the part
that
that
initial,
really.
oh sorry,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say very quickly that initial scene in Arrival in the first episode where the well number two tells everybody to freeze and you get the first appearance. That's just even just watching the show again and again. I've seen this show at least I don't know, but we're into double digits. Every time I watch that first episode and I get to that part, I just think they absolutely nailed every aspect of this. The sound design, the some of the sort of offbeat cuts, the editing where it's sort of like LA Scorsese, like Mean Streets editing, where they're editing for mood rather than strict continuity for shot to shot. You know what I mean? It's just so well done.
It
Aye, that
almost
was it.
feels like when things are edited too much with continuity in mind, it almost feels somehow insulting. And I think it's also stupid, like thinking that we're like our imaginations are broken or stupid or something, because it's like your mind understands dream logic innately, inherently. Like it just you see the images and you get the feelings and like you put things together. And it was so it's so well done that when I that first episode, I had a similar feeling to when I was like, what, 17 years old watching The Matrix in the theater? Like it was that a similar sort of like, oh wow, this is really something, you know? And I don't get that often anymore. I you know, a lot of new things don't really provide that as much. Or if they do, it's like they ruin it somehow. But this was just it's just all like nice, neat, and everything is where it belongs. And that moment was like, okay, you were watching a cool like 70s vibes, like weird spy show, and now you have no fucking idea what's gonna happen from here on out. Like
And you see that scene, and I mean I've heard this in terms of online testimonial from other people. Obviously, I didn't personally have this experience because I saw it so young. But like you said, your idea of this show just immediately explodes there. You're like, oh, so it's not just this guy, isn't it just James Bond, trying to get away from this place he's been abducted to. There's this whole sort of far future sci-fi tech that's so far future it might as well be, like you said, alien, you know? And it just puts you in this immediate conspiracy thriller, 3 Days of the Condor, parallax view kind of mindset. You're like, well, I can't trust any assumption I make about this show.
Oh, that's interesting because it's putting you in the place of Patrick McGoohan.
I know. I think that was probably deliberate.
It was also funny what you're talking about with the editing and it being very like odd, and there's like weird continuity differences too. Like there's a, I think it's in the first episode where he's walking and there's a cut to like a lava lamp that's red,
I know what you're
and then
talking about.
it goes back to the wide shot and there's a green one there, and
Yep.
it's like, what is this about?
I've literally seen people talk about that lava lamp. I know what you're talking about. People are like debating, is there something being implied here? Is this just a mistake? You know what I mean? So people have noticed. Obviously, they've had more than 40 years to comb through all these wee continuity things, you know what I mean? So, and it really is the kind of show, as you can imagine, that your brain just wants to turn everything into a very intentional rabbit hole with some
Yeah.
sort of prescribed meaning behind it. But that can be dangerous, obviously, because 60s TV, sometimes it's just going to be a gaffe, a mistake, you know what I mean? Inevitably. But it's still fun. It's still fun to speculate.
I think it, yeah, I think it adds to the, well, okay, like another thing about the tech. So, so for instance, they can just invade his dreams. Like basically the movie Inception is, there's already an episode that's more or less
It's
that
just a monster of the
in this
week
show.
here.
Yes. Well, and the, and so you have that one, and then there's the election episode too, where there's that really weird like silhouette with the square and the circle like going into his head and like making him it, and there was a, like that episode in particular, I got to the end of it, I'm like, how can they just not extract the information they want from him? Right? Like they're like, why did you resign? Because that's like the driving force of why he's stuck on this island. Oh, I guess we've never said this. So the basic premise is that this guy, Patrick McGoohan, plays this character. He goes by Number Six. I don't know if his name is ever actually mentioned, what his actual name is.
No, he's unnamed.
He's unnamed. Was a secret agent. He resigned. This all happens in like the intro to the show. He resigns, and due to his resignation, he's gassed in his apartment and wakes up in this weird place that's the village, which looks like, what's really hilarious is that there's this like planned community in Atlanta called Serenby that is this fucking place. It's just like all this, like I so want to just dress up like Patrick McGoohan and just wonder it and like just be suspicious at people. But it looks like this collection of like architectural follies, like you might find in like a really giant like estate where there's like domed houses and like all this stuff. It's very like this, like feels like a bizarre mishmash of a bunch of different like old architecture, and he's
It looks like a town in a Morrowind mod or like a Skyrim mod
yeah
to me.
yes it
It's very RPG.
Yeah, it's very odd, and they're stuck him there, and they're keep trying to get him to tell them why he resigned. Like they can't get at this information, which based on the technology, well, this is just my reading, and like on the first four episodes, based on the technology that they're capable of, I don't think they would have any problem of actually extracting that information. To me, it seems like what they're actually trying to do is just break him and make him do what they want him to do. It's not even about the information.
I haven't
That's.
seen the rest of it. I sort of don't want to specifically comment on that, but that is, what can I say? It's good. It's good that you're thinking along these lines. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's kind of like where my head went to was from there was like it reminds me of there's a Bill Hicks bit where he's like, can we stop turning everything into a fucking dollar sign? And then he makes another character's voice, and it's like, oh, going for that anti-dollar dollar. That's clever. It's like, Jesus fucking Christ. And so, like, that's kind of what I'm picking up on is it almost seems like an inability to understand a moral position. Like they think there's got to be something else going on here, but like maybe it was actually his internal moral compass, which they don't really believe exists or something. Like there, it seems abstract to me. And yeah, I know you can't comment because spoilers,
And
but.
I do think there are some sort of, in the sort of very lengthy, very beautiful intro sequence, which, by the way, I don't think I've ever skipped it. It's just fun to watch every time. The song's great, but even in that scene, when you think of number six opening the door to the crash of thunder and stuff, they're sort of telling you. Magoon is there's really economical characterization here. We completely muted dialogue, so you're not getting it for his actual words, but just his mannerisms, and he smashes the teacup and all that, and he storms away. They're really effectively characterizing him already, almost silently, as a man of decisive action and like almost ridiculous determination. And that's sort of the struggle, as you said, cut there, of the show, and the sort of rotating cast of number twos. Do you know what I mean? Because they just cannot comprehend this guy who won't bend.
I really, I go ahead, Kurt.
Oh yeah, no, and that's another interesting aspect of this. So like everybody in the village has a number, and then it's ostensibly led by a guy number two, and his but and Patrick McGoohan's always number six. Patrick McGoohan's always like, "What? Who's number one?" And number two will never tell him. And what's funny is that number two's never the same person in any episode, it seems. Like he's always rotating two. Which what's implied there is very weird. That there's just an endless sea of candidates to just rotate in and out of this position from
Yeah,
outside. And
it suggests this organization has far reach and like I can get to, can like take their pick, you know, and these people are like constantly number twos are always being reminded how expendable they are. So
they
it's like,
are.
how many people do you have clued into this organization that are also expendable? Like, it seems like that at that high level, people would be more of an asset, but like, no.
And as you said earlier, I think it may have been you, Rev, the ambiguity about, what side the village is operating under the auspices of that just adds this really interesting dimension where you can see that the village is international. They're taking people, well, I would assume mostly from the UK, because a lot of the actors are from the UK. But there is still this sort of international reach implied that you stop just short of being able to really ground yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like even geographically, like I know where they shot it, obviously, but even then, and they shot it in like rural Wales somewhere.
Tell us where is the village?
And it does look, you know what I mean? It looks almost Tolkienian. You know what I mean? It looks like an idyllic wee place. But
Yeah, I would have believed somewhere along the Baltic or North Sea too, like.
I could have believed that 100%.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not like he's not trapped in a terrible place. Like it's actually kind of charming. It has its own little stupid like restaurant, and like that's why I keep saying like, oh ter yeah, I if I went to Serengeti, I'd just ask people who's number one. That's all I would do. But it's the exact same thing. It's this little planned area, planned very village that has its own. It has its own restaurant, its own shop. It's like everything's contained, and it does seem like if he just went along with it, it would probably be kind of a nice existence.
No, I think it would be. I think that's one of the key tensions of the show is he could later on, if you want, we can get into the sort of certainly my interpretation and a lot of people's interpretation that Patrick McGoohan is working out his very complicated feelings about television and being beholden to the producers of television and this show. And once you sort of have this lens suggested, it's really hard for it to no stick, you know what I mean? And that's actually one what you just said though is one of the key things about that.
That it is actually a gilded cage.
I like his previous show, Danger Man, fairly popular sort of television James Bond competitor, and he leaves at the height of its popularity. He's not happy having enough creative control, and you can just feel in The Prisoner somebody unchained creatively. That's what it feels like, and that everybody is just trying to force him into conformity, into fawn, into lockstep with everybody else. It just feels so pointed. You know what I mean? It feels so intentional. And if I was a ITV executive, I'd be furious. But fuck you, Patrick McGoohan. Give me your salary if you hate me so much.
I'm actually curious what, like, it's funny because I told Rev, I'm like, you know, that's Longshanks from Braveheart, right? That's who that guy is. But I don't know him besides that and this show. Like, when this show, because this ran for 17 episodes, what was his career after this?
Oh no, this like killed his career. The
Oh,
Prisoner,
wow. Yeah.
it killed his career.
Oh.
And he went in the, this is true, this sounds apocryphal, but it's actually true. He had to go into hiding for 2 weeks after the finale because he had so many death threats.
My God.
So
Okay.
prepare yourselves for the two-parter finale. You know what I
Candace
mean?
Owens, eat your heart out.
Maybe it was Israel.
Who's done nothing wrong for the
No,
record?
that was a joke.
Oh.
Obviously, it wasn't Israel.
Makes the sign of the cross.
Wow, so he basically didn't really work again after this.
No, and he did say in numerous interviews, decades afterwards, I knew I was kind of dropping a bomb on my own career with the ending, but it's the ending that felt right. It's what I wanted to do, so I just did it. But he did also say in the same breath, I didn't realize it meant that I would almost never work again. I thought it would
Wow.
just mean maybe jobs dry up for a year or two. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And he was actually before he got Danger Man, McCune was mostly known as a stage actor. He worked with Orson Welles.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
During a what play was it again? It was Orson Welles's production of what was it? I'm looking. I have a an autistic prisoner document here.
The master file.
Does
Oh,
it
it's
have
more.
multiple flow charts that then get
I stopped just shy. Oh, that seriously,
Okay.
Moby Dick. It was his production of Moby
Oh,
Dick. I could not
wow.
remember for the life of me, though. I was thinking it was Shakespeare.
I bet Orson Welles did a killer Moby Dick.
I bet it was incredible.
Yeah.
And Orson Welles said, by all rights, Patrick McGoohan should have been one of the biggest, most well-paid actors in film, but television snapped them up. And it was to the detriment of his career, and I think he's right.
Yeah, I mean I've been super impressed this whole time. He's really good at the subtleties in like you know when he is and is not under the influence of whatever drugs they've given him still,
Oh, definitely.
Like his acting changes to this like sharp and jerky weird, like
Mm-hmm.
where it's still him, but it's just like these weird parts that are accentuated and it drowns everything else out. The way that like you expect a drug to actually work, like it's really interesting. I've been loving that.
I always feel like he's having a lot of fun whenever they drug him.
Yeah.
Because he really he flops about like a fish, you know what I mean? He really goes for it. And he has this kind of, I don't think I've ever, the show has reminded me of Twin Peaks before, but
Yeah.
I've never really saw Kyle MacLachlan, Dale Cooper in the number six character, but this time watching it, something about he has this sort of boyish bounce to his walk. And a kind of funny run. I don't know if anybody has caught his funny wee run that he
Yeah,
does.
he does. He is kind of, it does weird. Yes.
His
Yeah.
arms are kind. I actually can't put it into words what his arms are doing. That's so strange to the eye, but it does look weird.
I
Yeah,
haven't
it's
noticed. awkward. It's kind of awkward. I think he's a tall guy, isn't he?
I think he is quite tall.
Yeah, and I think there's something about him being so tall that he has to, like, if he doesn't keep his arms tight, they're just gonna flop everywhere and like
That could be it.
crash trees and stuff. So he's like, it's got this like awkward,
Oh, yeah,
like.
it almost looks like in T2 when T1000 is like coming back and chasing them and he's got
Oh,
blades for
yep.
arms.
No, that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
It is funny. But that's awkward. But then when he's like beating the shit out of people, it's totally like
I love
yeah.
it. The Batman, the 60s Adam West Batman fight scenes. I've like unironically, I don't just like old films and old TV. I don't watch it for that sort of sense of superiority or how
Yeah.
bad and ropey this all was. I do genuinely appreciate old, naive theatrical acting. I like it. I like
Yeah, me too.
I like the sort of place that puts me in as a viewer. And I love the fight scenes, if anything, immerse me further into the atmosphere of the show. You know what I mean? Not realistic.
Well,
No, I don't watch
maybe.
anything really for irony. Like I actually
Nah. Yeah, I hate
I kind
irony.
of disagree with that as a modality.
No, I completely disagree, but I couldn't agree
Yeah.
more with you.
Yeah.
No, I kind of, in some ways, I think at this point in an entertainment career, like these fights actually might be more realistic because real fights are kind of awkward and weird. They're not like, not everyone looks cool and like can do like six moves where they break an elbow and then like throw someone into a frying pan and break their head off a glass pane or anything. This is just like everybody sort of flopping around and throwing wild haymakers at each other.
Well, it's again back to like just an excess of realism kind of makes it to where you don't feel like you're watching a movie anymore. You know, like you don't want it to feel too real, you don't want it to feel too extraordinary, but it's just like whatever style of fight scene matches the visual storytelling like mode you're going with is what you should probably pick. And wouldn't it look weird if these fight scenes looked better?
If they were like kinetic Shinya Tsukamoto fight scenes, you know what I mean? It would not fit.
No.
No, it's great. I was also surprised to like, okay, so in episode one you get your mind blown at the freeze scene and when the ball makes its first the ping pong ball balloon thing makes its first appearance. But then the end of episode two absolutely like did that again. Like it blew my mind out again because I really didn't expect him to be like in that office with his boss and it to all just be
Oh,
like
the recording of
yeah
the traffic sounds.
like
Yeah, that was really well done.
I was like I know this is episode two and I know he didn't make it out already but I still like wanted it so I don't know it was like I still was like they're not gonna just there's no way this whole thing was. Bah! It's like even though you know there's no other logical outcome for this plot because of where this episode sits in the chain of episodes, but I still like couldn't believe that that's how it still got me, I guess is what I'm saying.
No,
And the
I
yeah,
definitely.
go.
No, that was it. That was it. I'm just agreeing.
Oh yeah, no, and then it's such a weird escape too. Like, we're gonna nail you into this crate with this woman where we're split, and we're just gonna ship you to like, that works. That's a thing you could do. Okay.
And Big Bill. I really like
Big
Big
Bill,
Bill.
Big Bill, yeah. Oh, that's right, because she's was she Russian? Right, she was
I
Russian,
don't think
or
we know for sure.
sure, yeah.
I don't think they say precisely where she's from.
She said Estonian.
Estonian and
Oh, she
Bulgarian,
did.
yeah, that's right. I think, and then maybe he said, "I think you're Bul," or something like that. He says something, "I think you're Bulgarian," or yeah.
He like contests it or makes a joke about it or something.
Yeah.
Right. He's like Russian. Yeah, he like
Oh no,
corrects
that's
her.
it. Aye, he says, "Oh, Russian. We would call that Russian or whatever." Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
And well, and then that trope comes back again, where in the Freedom for All episode, where he's like teamed up with this woman that speaks German and speaks German the entire fucking
I
episode.
love that
I
episode.
thought it was
It's
Italian. Whatever it was, at the
actually a made up language
is it?
for the show.
Oh my God!
They invented a sort of glossolalia for her to speak.
Holy shit. Holy
That's
shit, man.
incredible. I
It's very
really thought it
cool.
was like Italian or
It sounds
maybe
real.
some small
Yeah, it
country
does. It sounds really real. Oh my God, that's even better. And then at the end, she's like, she speaks English and is like, I'm number two.
And that's the number two reveal that hurts the most, because I really love their strange bedfellows kind of dynamic up to that point.
Yeah.
And having watched the three episodes, four episodes, or whatever up to that point, I mean, you're kind of suspecting everybody, but
Yes.
that one still hurts. I'm like, damn, I really liked it when you were speaking funny German or funny Italian, whatever that was, you know?
It's so funny how she's just sort of like inserted into his like when he's like, she won't go away and she doesn't speak English. It's great. 'Cause when he's on the drugs, it's like you can tell that he just can't help but enjoy this. There's this female companion. She's pretty and she's around, you know, like, and then he snaps out of it some more. And yeah, it's so interesting how that, like, 'cause that would. If you were just kind of doped up and there's just some pretty lady and you can't understand any words she's saying, it's like there's nothing but pleasant and you're just kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Definitely. You start speaking the language almost de facto love, because there's
Yeah.
nothing else. You can't communicate. So, I.
It's also amazing that they're like, they're con because the whole the premise of the episode is they're trying to convince number six to they're having an election for number two, which you're immediately like, that's bullshit, but they're like, you should run, and they keep trying to get number six to run, and so he does this speech, and then I think he agrees to it, and they immediately drop a placard, and like, and they have number six for number two, like they have the poster already. And then there's like this amazing, like, they sh reveal it, and then there's like the I think there's a cut back to a zoom of his face, like, oh.
Yeah. It escalates so quickly. It's like every time a new concept about the election is brought up, it is actualized within 2 seconds. It's just
Yeah.
like idea, boom, there's the payoff. Idea, boom, there's the payoff. And suddenly he's like in a car and people are swarming him and he's like taking, like giving press statements and things.
And there's also sort of a suggestion that, like, oh, this is actually how it works outside the village.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially when he gets his like mental conditioning from that guy. It's just so amazingly weird.
That part where he's speaking to the I think it's the chimes of Big Ben, when he's speaking to his boss or his ex-superior or whatever, and he's really manic, he's really frenzied, and he says, it's different out here, isn't it? And he sort of asks him for reassurance. And so there is that suggestion. You're 100% right to locate that. You know what I mean? There is this suggestion that the village is the Cold War in microcosm, in miniature.
Yeah, and it's since it's condensed and smaller, it shows how things really work because you can't avoid it. Man, I don't
But
even
it's so
know. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
it's so genius that like they didn't say what sides ever yet, at least. That they've never really like made it sound it sounds ambiguous. Like you someone can watch this now, like a Zoomer could watch this and not know that they don't need to know about the Cold War, right? Like they could just watch it and it would just be like, which side are you on? Like will always make sense.
I actually think that's a pretty clever as well on the part of Magoon to obviously he's like chiefly responsible for the writing. The parts that he didn't write, he rewrote, and then there are episodes that he directed that he's uncredited for and all that. So it really is, and obviously he came up with the idea. So he has like it is his brainchild. So I think that was probably something for him where he knew he went. You have the vaguest suggestion, like you said, mention asides. No more specific than that. He's not speaking about specific countries, specific governments, or world leaders. That was smart. You know, I mean, you want to keep the sort of allegory as open as possible.
It's like when you're so true to your own vision that and you're that careful and you really take the time and consideration to make something that's going to stand the test of time and be a classic like decades and decades later. I think that it's like those things are, if you look in history, like artists that were never appreciated when they were alive. It's there's something about like when you stay really true to what you're doing, like people might hate you now, but later they will thank you, kind of thing. Like we're sitting here all these years later, like I am fucking fascinated by this show's existence right now. And like I don't know, I hope somewhere he knows that like people love it this much. Because that's got to be crushing to be like I did it. I did the thing that I really want to do, but now I'm not working in that capacity anymore. But I was worth it. Like if he ever listens to, I want you to know. Is he dead? Is he alive?
I think he might have died kind of recently, like within the last 5 years or so, I think.
Okay. Well. Yeah, I hope you can hear us.
Yeah, definitely. Wait, and it's also amazing, and I'm looking forward to how this plays out in future episodes too, because there's like these little mini, not I guess allegories too within this, like the whole like we want you to enter this art contest. And he fucking carves a boat, and it's obviously a goddamn boat. There's no way that they don't know that that's what he's making. But then he puts it in there as this abstraction, and it's this amazing, weird, like rough hewn, like you see the boat shape, but there's all these other little things, and then it's surrounded by these realistic portraits of number two. Like the whole rest of the art show is just fucking, and so there's this weird thing about like what art used to be and figurative versus like, you know, and the boat is freedom of him getting away and like it developing into this more abstract, like confusing, like abstract thing, and like where art could go. Like there's that's contained within this.
And there's this sort of just inherent comedy to the idea that there's like state mandated art competition
Contest.
about one of the nominees for election. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? It's just very funny.
And then I also love that for his boat to work, he has to get the tapestry that this woman wove. That's the sail.
Oh, that's so good. That shot of the sail sort of being hoisted on the water. That's great.
There's also something interesting about like what you were just saying about the like this abstract where art might could go thing, and like rather than being representative. But what's so the extra layer to that is that it's not even like it's actually going to turn into a boat.
Boat,
Like it's just
yeah.
so it's actually a tool that's been disassembled. So it's more representative than the other art, just not in the current form. It's really interesting.
What is that line? Number six says, he says, it is what it does, or something like that. He says this really, a pretty cold reply. I really enjoy his, how dry he is, and how much that particular number two appreciates his humor.
Oh, that number two is my favorite so far.
Same.
He's the best. I think most fans of the show would say he's the best one.
And they had such a great rapport and chemistry.
And he I can't remember the actor's name, but he was actually friends with Patrick Magoon, and I think you can really
Okay.
tell that.
I recognize him from something else because I remember his eyes, like the different color eyes.
Yeah, he was definitely familiar. Well, I have to ask, and it's probably a minor spoiler. Do they rotate the twos? Do they come back, or is it always?
Do you want a yes or no to that?
I want a yes or no to that. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, they
I'm complete.
rotate.
Yes.
Cool.
I won't say any more, but
Yeah,
yes.
yeah.
Yes. Okay.
That's nice to know.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, it's
Because
great. I'm gonna run to the bathroom real quick. The one episode we have not, I don't think we've even really touched on the dream one, but like that one was incredible. And we should talk about that a little bit. I'm thinking of keeping these like an hour to an hour and a half max because we're going to do like four or five of them probably. So,
No
yeah.
problem.
All right.
That's fair.
Once you
So
sell.
what do you are you in Scotland?
Scotland. Yep.
Yes, okay.
How could you tell?
Well, there's some overlap with other but because I think if it's thick Welsh, sometimes it might have a little bit of the same twang. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like.
I definitely, well, I've heard from just a lot of American people that I know anecdotally that a sufficient thick, generally northern and working class accent for anywhere in the UK, it all just sounds,
Similar.
it sounds like you've got soup in your mouth when you're trying to speak, you know what I mean?
Do you know about the weird thing where in the rural south of America, like the accent is influenced by older English speech patterns?
Oh, I love all that stuff. I've read all
Yeah.
about that. I think that's very interesting.
It is, yeah. Like my grandmother, she never said pants, she always said britches. Like, pull up your britches.
Oh man,
And
that's great.
I was like, where the hell did that come? That no one else says that. Such a random aspect. What do you do besides watch The Prisoner? Or is it just
Well,
that?
right now it's been just watching The Prisoner. I mean,
Okay.
I suppose in terms of creative stuff, I've been sort of tossing about the idea. I've been writing a bunch of short stories recently. I've never had it and published or anything like that, but I'm sort of, it's one of these things where you sort of say to yourself, does the world need another Substack? You know what I mean? But I'm thinking about, making a Substack, putting some stuff on it. Especially
Do it.
being, I think I will. I think I will just do it, just to say that I've done it. But
The
it's
world needs another decent Substack.
well, good point. Good point. I agree.
Yeah, and I
It's
definitely would love to read it.
I. No,
Yeah.
awesome. I'm definitely thinking about doing it. If I ever did, I was gonna drop a link in the Agitator Discord anyway, just because people usually send in stuff that they've made or whatever. So.
That's a if anybody here's listening and the and you're into making your own art and you're into writing and indie publishing and such, and you haven't heard of Agitator Podcast, you should check it out. It's a really good group of people. I don't know if their Discord is even an open thing anymore. I don't think it is, but they're awesome. Yeah, you should check them out.
The Patreon is definitely worth it, and because it's a good show, you know what I mean? They do good stuff.
Episode 3.
The Dream episode, yes.
Yeah, the dream episode. That one, I kind of like had this feeling when it started, like this begrudging sort of like, oh, we're gonna have a dream episode and it's gonna be probably pretty predictable. I don't know why. I don't know if I've just been jaded from that same sort of plot line before. It was a strange feeling. And then I was like, of course, very pleasantly surprised with how it all played out. But yeah, like it was pretty striking going back to the technology thing that this lady was just like, yeah, I just kind of like whipped up this serum. I'm trying to get it to work. And he's like, well, it better work now. And if it kills him, if it doesn't, then we're going to use it on you. And it's just like, what the f what? Like, what is she supposed to even do with that? Like, that number two was such an asshole. Different kind of way. But yeah, like, it's fun because I thought it was fun that he kind of knows what's happening, right? Like in that scene where he first wakes up a little groggy, there's like muddy footprints all over the carpet, which they don't even point out, but it's like there for a second, and it's like really obvious someone was in there. They didn't even try to cover their tracks. So it almost feels like there's like this psychological game in there where it's like we it's not like he's not going to figure out something's going on.
Yeah.
But yet he still acts suspicious and weird about it. It's like, I don't know. It just feels like it's almost like cognitive dissonance that would just further confuse him. But
Well,
it.
it in a weird way, it's almost that episode's almost like, in a weird way, like the opposite of the election episode, where they're both about controlling or warping his mind. But in one, he actually comes out on top, because at the end of the dream episode, it's like, who are you trying to sell your information to? And it's the number two is like, it's him. He shows him himself, and like he's failed. While in the election episode, it's Patrick McGoohan is forced to be number two, and it's this like, that is also a failure. And like this like I've been forced. It's almost like he's forced to. It's almost like this that episode's like a punishment for succeeding at the prior episode in a weird way.
It did feel like that.
Yeah.
And do either of you guys know about the weird broadcast episode order fuckery to do with the
No.
prisoner?
No.
So Arrival, the opening episode, and the two-part finale, they're in order. They were broadcast in order. Every other episode was broadcast by ITV without Magoon's knowledge or input in. I've like made up order by the producers. So the dream episode is actually episode 3, I think. Oh no, it's actually episode 2, and the Chimes of Big Ben is meant to be episode 3. Aye, so you'll notice at in a way, it's kind of additive because it adds a sort of extra layer of mystery because you have to piece the chronology together sometimes. But based on sort of some things that number six says that sort of alludes to other episodes,
Interesting.
you can roughly work it out. But Magoon was apparently furious, and I can understand why because it is a mystery show, and you're airing episodes out of order.
Yeah.
I mean, that just feels like me trying to make sense of X-Men the animated series growing up.
Well,
That was a pain in the ass.
What's also funny because that's how a lot of TV shows were. Like, especially if they're repeats, like you would maybe you might only see like the middle of the third season or something, and you're just dropped in the middle of it, and you don't know, and you just sort of have to piece it together from context clues,
Well, from
which
here
was
on
more common.
out. Oh, sorry. I didn't know
No,
that.
go ahead. Go ahead.
Just from here on out, I want to like look up the intended
The intended order. Yeah, I'm
order and
curious
stick to
too.
that. But are we at least still within the first four? Like the first four were these four?
It's the only thing that's happened is that two of the episodes are the one that should be two is three, and the one that should be three
Three is
is two or
two.
whatever. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's not a big deal, and you probably don't even notice that really, I would say.
No, I don't
I
think
mean,
so.
I don't think there's actually anything sort of dialogue-wise. You will. It gets a bit schizophrenic though later, when you're later in the series, and number six will be like, "I'm new here," and you're like, "You're not new here. You've been here for ages." You know what I mean? And it's because that episode was meant to be episode five or something, and it's episode like 14. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So you will notice that as the series goes on, but it's not the biggest deal in the world.
Well, yeah, I'll just, I'm just, we're just gonna look up the intended.
Yeah, well, it's also funny because in a weird way that actually adds to it because
I agree.
yeah, it's like it makes it like, well, the reality is much more mixed up and confusing. So like I feel like he may not have wanted it that way, but in some way that contributes to what to its
No,
effectiveness.
maybe
Maybe.
God wanted it that way.
Maybe.
Well, that's probably he would have seen
Excuse me. I'm trying to what it's all that dream episode's also interesting because you see what his life was like outside of the village and kind of how he interacted with people and how sort of in control and slick he was. And in contrast of like constantly always being on his back foot, it feels like, and when he's in the village.
It also was I don't know, it was cool to see like you in the pilot you see the arrival you see like you were saying in that opening sequence, which is masterful, you get like the whole backstory to his character. So like even if you're catching episode like nine randomly, like you can still start it and be like, oh, okay, this guy quit his job and he got kidnapped and he's kind of stuck here. But it's cool that like what was supposed to be episode two would be kind of expounding on that immediately. Like I didn't expect that. I figured they would have a flashback episode, but I thought it would be like later on.
Well, oh, and actually that's another mind fuck because this is actually it's his dream, so it's how he sees himself.
Oh, there's a layer remove. You know what I mean? A layer of
Yeah.
artifice because it's no, it's only his subjective reality.
Another T, yeah.
Pretty interesting. There's a lot of sort of weird perspective games being played in the show. You know what I mean? Like that. It's a pretty interesting.
Yeah. Oh, man. I also so like the technology in that episode there they can somehow like insert things in his dream with like a tape reel. I'm not sure how that works. But it's also interesting that they're watching his dreams on a TV screen. Like whereas like now we would do something where they like drop in virtually or some crap like that, but this there's the removal and the artifice of them. What and again that there's an implied level of the technology that seems way outside of what was current at the time that they can just oh we can project what's going on in his brain onto a TV screen, just as an aside, I also like I love all the weird like there's that the weird like central surveillance room that's got the guys on like the TV, the beam,
The
like,
seesaw.
yeah, that's going back and forth, and they're looking at
Right.
it. And it's like,
Right.
what is the logic of this?
Right.
What is happening?
I call that the surveillance seesaw. That is just pure Lynchian. Like, that's
Weird.
just, it's just a thing, a dreamlike thing that's sort of eye-catching and sort of suggestive of
Yes.
some technological process. But I don't know. I love that. Anytime it cuts to that room, I'm like, fuck yes, man.
Yeah,
Surveillance
exactly.
seesaw.
It feels to me when I those aesthetics of the whole like inside of that dome and all their weird tech, it feels so like my favorite thing about James Bond movies is the set designs.
Oh yeah, that was a famous guy who did all of them.
Okay.
Yeah,
That makes sense. But
I forget his
I
name.
always just felt like the what they actually did with them was wholly uninteresting to me. Like I Bond movies are fine. There's some nice things about them, but like it's not The Prisoner. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah,
it doesn't
definitely.
enthrall you. And to see sort of like weird 70s cool nonsensical technology designs that were also part of a cool story that's actually riveting was like, yes, finally.
Well, like the seesaw, I'm sure came from like TV boom cameras. It was
It
like,
looks
yeah, it's
like that.
like, yeah, it's like we'll take that and then we'll adapt it in a weird way. And then like there's something suggestive about like one guy's up and one guy's down, and like what is it? There's probably some meaning between who's on top and who isn't. And like and that also seems to be number two has to call them to release the globe, the Sentinel. It seems like it's always going back to them, and then the Sentinel is like birthed every single time.
Yeah.
I love that the bespoke birthing sequence where you see it form for a wee tiny bubble into
Yeah.
the big white orb. And again, that sort of like the seesaw room. Anytime it cuts to that sequence, I just think, fuck yes, let's go.
It's so well done. And like if it were smoother or like not, I don't know, it's the jagged sort of weirdness of the way that it's in reverse to that all works to its advantage
Oh, love it.
so well.
It's rickety, it's rough around the edges, but
Yeah.
you're totally right. It's additive. It doesn't detract. It pulls you in closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually the quality of it being obtuse makes it feel way more high tech. Because it's like I don't even understand how this works or why it works, like which you know, if you're into like the whole alien disclosure shit, that's how they talk about UFOs. Like if you go inside of them, it's just a big fucking empty room, and there's like plates for your hands, and like this doesn't like we none of this makes any sense. And so to me that like adds that quality just makes it even more like where how far ahead are these people to
Yeah,
us?
if it looks like it shouldn't work, but then it works really well, like
Yeah.
you're just like, oh, I'm out of my depth. It does this weird reversal thing.
Oh yeah, and then the psychological rooms that are just like a hallway of people like skitzing out and like a red carpet.
The weird pink, hot pink lighting.
Yes.
I.
Oh wait, then there's also the guy. He looks into one window, and there's a guy with that floating egg, and he's like,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, is I feel like there's something about these I wanna say like superpower MK Ultra autistic like they're these and they're these there's these people that you don't see them. I haven't seen them out anywhere else. They're just like these weird, they don't act like normal humans and they're always having
In
something.
jumpsuits,
Yeah, and I have something
those
to do
guys, yeah.
with that, have something to do with that security globe orb, right?
Yeah,
Like, which is more than a security orb, right? Because they have to have like special treatment afterwards, and they say like, oh, don't touch them. Like, so it does something to them that is like it's suggestive that it's like horrific, and you just can't see that it's horrific.
It's sort of watching The Prisoner, you can obviously see, immediately insert the prisoner's DNA into so many shows that came afterwards. And one of the things that the orb sort of makes me think of is the X-Files, and the way that the X-Files, the way the have either of you guys seen the X-Files?
Oh yeah.
I
Parts
thought
of
you
it, yeah.
probably would have seen at least some of it. The way the sort of in the early seasons of the show, the black, well, the black fluid, the way
Yeah, the
that would sort
black
of
goo.
the way that would articulate in terms of on screen how they would represent that that is affecting people. It had a sort of grab bag of effects that it could do, you know what I mean? So it
Yeah.
always left you, it really did feel alien in that sense, because it was almost like this thing comes into contact with human DNA and one of several very different things could happen, you know what I mean? And like you were saying about the orb, it just it gives it this really uncanny, is a bit of an overused word now, but I do think there's a really uncanny quality. It's quite unsettling. Again, impressive considering it's a hot air balloon, you
Yeah.
know.
Yeah. It kind of feels like there was a general shape to the show Lost that was ripped off from this too.
Oh, Abrams admitted that. He said the smoke monster is the
Yeah.
orb. He
That's immediately what I
and
thought.
you can tell. You can tell.
I didn't know he admitted it. That's cool. I
Aye.
love that. I love that he's just like, yeah, I just took it from this.
Aye. No, I like that. I like
Yeah.
that.
Lost was still such a disappointment, but like, cool.
No, I agree. I mean, it's one of the shows. If you ever rewatch it, you think you're like two or three seasons deep, and you're like, oh, "This is still pretty good." I mean, maybe I was wrong all these years about, "Oh, it gets bad." Maybe this has just like received wisdom, and I've been like psyoped into thinking Lost was bad, and then immediately you get into the bad seasons, and you're just like, "I'm just gonna stop. I'm just gonna
You've recharacterized half of the cast and
stop."
yeah, left a million plot holes and or like storylines that they build up to and then just leave you hanging. That's actually what like kills something. Like
Oh,
it, you
definitely.
invest emotionally and then they're just like moving on.
And the Prisoner only having one season and 17 episodes. There's obviously, as you can imagine, some open-endedness. But I overall, I would rather that than the Lost route. It doesn't have to be a firm dichotomy between these two things, but
Yeah.
generally, if you stay on the air for five, six, seven seasons, you're going to explain too much. If you're a mystery show,
Yeah.
you're going to kill some of the mystery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the only ways you can avoid that is if you do what David Lynch did with Twin Peaks: The Return, where you almost suggest that the show has been continuing for 25 years in between seasons, and we just haven't seen any of it. You know what I mean?
Or like with Evangelion, where it's like you just wait like 34 years later, and then you're like, "Oh, the cycle's been renewing over and over, and we're just gonna give you a glimpse into one of them." Like,
I.
oh.
It's diminishing returns, basically brevity. If you're doing a
Yeah.
mystery show, brevity is always, you should always try and leave people wanting a wee bit more, I feel like.
Yeah, it was actually when I, because I was, I'm old enough to have started watching X-Files when it was first airing. And I think I've watched most of the first season. And there's a part of me that sort of lost interest because I was immediately like, oh, they can't ever actually explain anything because then the show's over. So that sort of made me step
You
back
say
away from
X-Files?
X-Files. Yeah, that
Oh.
made me step away from it. Probably to my detriment because I know it has amazing stuff past way past that first season.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, and it's someday
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
redo it. Yeah. But the other thing about Twin Peaks and its third season is that it's That third season's way fucking weirder than the first two ever could
Yep.
attempt to be.
It's not even close.
Yeah, not even.
Yeah.
And is much like well, okay, so that's interesting too, like the tonal the unnerving, unsettling quality that like the globe has in The Prisoner, and some of the aspects like Twin Peaks, especially that third season, is some of the most unsettling shit I've ever watched. Particularly the finale. The finale is deeply disturbing.
The finale is soul destroying. It's just so
Yeah.
alienating. And
Yes.
that note, Dale Cooper has finally walked in. He's walked into the frame of Fire Walk With Me and took Laura Palmer out. So
Yeah.
you've got this sort of existential, things are going to be all right now. And then the last episode, she's in what, a pocket dimension, something like that, and
Yeah.
all the sort of trauma that she lived through, it's all happening again. It didn't mean for that to be a Twin Peaks pun, but it definitely fits. And then just that final note of the scream, the cut to black, I could weep. It's a horrible
Yeah.
feeling, and in the best way possible.
Yeah, the what year is it
Oh,
was the most disturbing line I've ever heard in a show.
painful.
Yes.
The implication of that line is just not good.
Not at all.
Yeah. Man, I think it, not to get off on the return though, but like, I think it's an important point that I don't think I've ever seen made anywhere before, that like too much chivalry can get you into just as much trouble. Like, that's kind of what I ended up taking from that. And I'm just, yeah, it's like a gut punch that someone with a lot of wisdom can deliver. And I don't think
I
anyone else can.
definitely the work of Lynch and Frost, two old men, lived entire lives. Lynch couldn't have known it at the time, but obviously coming to the end of his own life even.
Yeah.
You really get the feeling with the return. It's like the way Cooper's heroism is portrayed there sort of recontextualizes the way you take his heroism in seasons one and two in the movie, because like you said, you've seen it through this sort of critical lens now, where you're like, well, no, he fucked things up arguably worse than they were before by trying to be Dale Cooper, the archetype. You know what I mean? It's a, like you said, it's quite a rich, deep point to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels very like it feels like he got somewhere with his transcendental meditation.
A
You know?
100%.
I mean, that's what it feels like. It's like, be careful of trying to be the good guy, because yeah, good, bad, they're both very polarized positions, and if you're like committed too much to one or the other, but like, yeah, it's, you can feel that in number six, like a lot. Like there's
Yeah,
the,
that
it's not
like
necessarily heroism or wanting to be the hero, but it's like that single-minded unbendingness that you see in both. So I'm just so interested to see how this develops, and knowing how much controversy there is about the finale, like that's really exciting.
No, having listened to the podcast and stuff, and knowing what you guys are into and your kind of general tastes, I do think you'll appreciate it, even if you don't love it as much as I do. I don't think either one of you guys are going to be, ripping your t-shirts saying, "Oh, this, I wish I hadn't watched this show." You know what I mean? It's not going to be anything like that.
We're not going to be like finding his grave to pee on it or
No, no, no,
anything.
no. You'll definitely see the value in it, I feel like.
Yeah, I've noticed that, like, I'm the weird guy posting esoteric shit on the Discord, on the agitated Discord, and like you're the one person who seems to always be like, no, I get it, like, all right.
No, and I did just genuinely, I feel like most things you say, I'm like, No, I totally. That's it. I agree. I have either thought that or that makes complete sense to me, you
Yeah.
know? So.
Well, man, I feel like this is. Do you guys have anything else you want to add for these? Or is this a good place to wrap it for this one?
Other than I want to own a lot of the clothes in this series too. I think the fucking wardrobes are bitching.
Oh, insane.
I actually want one of the costumes that the women wear because it looks like some kind of like Ronald McDonald acid trip Robin Hood.
Yeah. It's like that one Beatles era just went real wrong, and then that's
There's
kind of what
a
it feels like. But
or
man,
like
he,
the
like
or like maybe it's like the because of the Cold War they could only get certain fabrics from certain countries and they really only like primary colors.
they're all dressed like Belle and Sebastian members. You know, they're dressed like twee indie band guitarists. Very interesting choice.
Yeah, they're all like, it's like school kids or something. Like it's like cute, harmless. But man, his like that like white lined black sports coat,
Oh, it looks great.
and then is that the, he has the, I think it's only been one episode, the fucking bathrobe that's like brown and black stripes. I'm just like, oh man, that's
I
amazing.
want that. Very cool.
Other than that, and then maybe some of the multicolored phones, the weird half moon phones
Oh.
that
For the minute they come on screen, you just think these phones are the main characters. Do you know what I mean? I could watch people talk into their things. Oh, apparently they were real.
Oh, really? I'm not shocked, actually.
What really? One of them looked just like a piece of foam that didn't have anything else on it. At one point, there was one that was like bigger than the rest, and it looked just like a piece. And I was actually like treasuring that it was like they didn't even care this time. They just.
Maybe they only had one that was real, actually. Maybe the rest of them are just, like you say, they're just sort of primary color pop art Andy Warhol wedges that people are holding up
Yeah.
to their face. But
Andy Warhol wedges. I think we should start a little startup where we sell like giant pieces of foam you can put your cell phone in and talk to it, like and talk on that.
Man, no, that would be amazing. Like the old car phones where it's just a giant fucking cinder block that you put to your
Yeah.
face.
And it doubles as an emergency flotation device.
Yes. Tired of phones getting thinner and smaller. Fix that for you.
Trying to think if I had anything else to say, just because we're wrapping up. No, I'll save it. There is some stuff I could say, but it's probably best served until
Further along,
further along,
more
you know what I
as
mean?
more stuff is revealed. Yeah,
Aye.
that's what's exciting. I could see each successive episode that we talk about this getting longer and longer as more of the like sediment builds
Yeah.
for what's going on in this show.
And I'm shocked if that isn't the case. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's just getting like the more I watch, the more interested I am to know more peripheral stuff about the show and like to read interesting little things about it. And yeah, it's really awesome to have you on board with this because you love it. And that's the perfect situation is where someone that already loves the thing and believes in it is here to like kind of bring it to our attention or the audience or whatever.
And make sure that you have a little red pen to check mark every little thing in your autistic note system so that nothing gets missed.
No,
Deliver
listen,
all of that.
you don't have to tell me twice. I will do that. That was going to happen regardless. And look, guys, I appreciate the invitation. This was a lot of fun, and obviously, independent of speaking about the prisoner, I just enjoy the podcast. You say good stuff, so thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Oh man, that's
Yeah.
amazing to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know what else to say or when we're that was what I was gonna say. When we're gonna do the next one. I have been watching like an episode every night. So I don't know what you guys' schedules are like, but we can talk about it after this. But like, I think maybe a week apart would be good for the audience.
That sounds
Yeah, it's,
doable for me if it works for you guys.
yeah, I think so.
Sounds great.
I mean, we'll see how what Christmas plays out. That'll be the tricky one, but
Yeah, if we have
yeah.
to skip a week, it's okay because we'll have a couple other episodes we can just put up. But
Cool.
right on. Thanks everyone for listening. And again, I don't think I said this before, but this whole show is free on YouTube currently. So I will put a link in the show notes so that like if you open this episode and you're like, well, now this is at the end of the episode, so it doesn't fucking matter. But hopefully people will open it, be like, I haven't seen this. Oh, I can just click here. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
I might for the US the Shout Factory channel I think has all of the episodes.
cool. Yeah. And again, for a reminder, if someone wants to watch it at home and follow along with us, the check the episode, the intended episode order, just so you don't get totally lost later, unless you're into that. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
Right.